Regular monthly meeting of the Board of Respiratory Care Examiners at 9 o'clock on August 16th, 2018. Just as a reminder, this is a professional board setting, and when we are speaking, we ask that you not be speaking. And when you are up at the table speaking, we will give you that same courtesy. Board members, if you haven't already done so, please make sure your mics are on. Did you give them to us
yes.
on?
Yes.
Okay, so they're ready to go. We will. Did everyone sign in? If you're here to collect CEUs today, did you sign in? And have we collected that paper?
Yes.
Okay. So you will need to remain the entire length of the meeting, and at the end of that meeting, your name will be called to make sure you're still here in order to receive your CEUs. We're going to go ahead and start with introductions. My name is Tracy Kagan, and I'm chair of the board.
I'm Jose Gonzalez. I'm the vice chair.
Kathy Reiner, board member.
Alan Crawford, board member.
Michael Beller, board member.
Jack Confer, Executive Director.
Assistant Attorney General Frankie Schenekberg, Attorney for the Board.
Charlotte Muhammad, Assistant.
Kathy Stone, Board Staff.
Excellent, thank you. Okay, we will start with approval of the consent agenda, and that is items C1 up to and including C8.
A motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve. Do we have any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay. That motion passes. We do have a few things timed, so if you see me skipping around on the agenda, I do have a purpose for that. We are going to go ahead and get started with R4, consideration and action on investigations impossible on professional conduct. And the board will call the case of Jeffrey Hunter, case C00388-0-18-011432.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is an initial allegation. RCP Hunter did contact the office this morning and said that he was driving up here from, I think, Maricopa or Casa Grande, and there were several accidents. He probably would not make it on time. In addition to that, he did tell me that the criminal matter has been resolved. However, he said he was going to email a copy of the pleading and agreement this morning, but I didn't get it in time for the meeting. So I don't know the details of that.
Okay, so perhaps I will uncall that one and we'll move on until he arrives.
I'm not sure. I don't think he's going to be here.
Oh, he's not going to be here. Yeah. Well, then we'll just keep going. Okay.
So I'm unable to give you, but this is a case where he self-reported a DUI for an arrest on April 11th of 2018. The board did receive a self-report on April 23rd. He had been in contact with the office prior to that, I think Thursday, Friday before the weekend. So that is one of the reasons that I did not allege failure to report within the 10 days, because he did contact us and did follow up in writing after he figured out the form on the internet, that sort of thing. He was arrested for charged with two different counts, DUI liquor, drugs or vapor, and DUI liquor with a BAC of more than 0.08, which was a first offense. He did respond to it, and basically his response is in the report detailing his position in this. He also stated that he's already completed the DUI education and treatment program back on May 19th and 20th, which was 16 hours of education. And he's been very compliant with the board and reporting to the board update statuses since this first started. Without the, normally the plea will include the 10 days jail time with 9 days suspended. I think it's probably, he didn't have an attorney in that. I just don't have a copy of it to hand out. With that being said, I don't have anything further unless there are questions.
So this is his first DUI offense, it appears.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And we're still...
The courts are addressing.
Well, he says this morning that they're done, but we don't have any proof of that.
August 13th was his trial.
He, the message that I got said that it was resolved on Monday, this Monday.
Which would have been the 13th.
Right, and he was planning to be here but and be able to hand that out. And I think he emailed, there's another treatment meetings that he is enrolled with through the court. So I have an email for that also that came in last night. But I just don't have the details of the plea.
Right.
So we know he's not coming.
Right.
So should we table it?
I don't mean to cut you off. But in my opinion, I think we would handle this the same way we would handle most of our initial DUI cases. So he's self-reported. He seems to be compliant in whatever the board requests from him. I think that we would let the courts handle a disciplinary resolve. If this was multiple DUIs, I would have concerns, but...
Does he intend to supply you, Jack, with the documents? Okay.
Yes. I got both a message and I had a real short conversation with him this morning. He was planning to email those to me, but I think he was actually in the car driving back and he didn't have access to a computer. So between 7:40 and now,
you may have him in your email right now. We just don't know that yet. Okay.
I'd be willing to go along with what Alan said as long as Jack gets the paperwork or email or whatever it is that he's supposed to get.
If you want to table it, I can probably access my email here. I just can't print out. I can go check at a break or something and see if we have it. So at least you can review it before you make your vote. Or you can do it a contingent upon receiving and review by staff.
Oh, I
don't
like that idea. Because you're right. I mean, if he were in front of us, and even if he didn't have it with us, we kind of have a typical standard that we follow for first offenses.
Right.
So does anyone have a motion?
I guess I'll make a motion to dismiss based on evidence that we have yet to see. That all looks good. The courts have followed their
resolution.
Yeah, that's the one I'm looking for.
So your motion is to dismiss contingent on staff review of the documents?
Yes.
Okay, so we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second.
So to clarify, the motion is to dismiss contingent upon board staff receiving a resolution from the court.
Yes.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay.
Nay.
Okay, the motion passes. We will stay in R4, and the board will call the case of Daniel Lorzel, case C003884-18-005294.
Is RCP Lorzel here?
537.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is another report, self-reported DUI. The fact pattern is different in this case. This was reported on his renewal application and not within the 10 days required by statute. He submitted his renewal application on May 4th of 2018. RCP Lorzel was arrested and charged with three different counts on August 29th, speeding, DUI liquor, drugs, vapor, first offense, DUI liquor, BAC more than 0.08 or more, first offense. The records indicate that he did enter into a plea agreement for a violation of 2013-81A1, and the court imposed the standard terms, 12 months of unsupervised probation, court fees. He does have an ignition interlock device on his car, and he did suspend a sentence of one day in jail. This fact pattern is also a little different, and upon review of his licensing history, it appears that he had a DUI from 2008. And it also, licensing history indicates that he entered into a consent order to for the board to grant his license, which established terms and probations back in 2000, I believe it was. That is provided in your materials. RCP Lorville did respond to the complaint and basically states that he's providing the answer as required. It states on August 29, 2017, he was charged with misdemeanor DUI. It was an unfortunate incident in my life, and I regret to take full responsibility for it. Since that time, he's completed all the required courses and stipulations from the plea agreement. He states that he's been in this profession for 30 years. He prides himself on safe practices of respiratory care. He just states that upon renewing his license, he's self-reported. And he did not, he regrets not being able to do that within 10 days. So this is initial review. The board can dismiss, issue a letter of concern, ask staff to offer a consent agreement, either disciplinary or non-disciplinary, or send it to another level of review, which would be an informal interview. I don't have anything further unless you have questions.
Okay, thank you.
More questions? So in 2008, or at the time of his initial application, he had a history of a DUI?
It was a criminal, if memory serves, this is on page...
February 20th,
2008. 577 through 579 is a copy of the original consent agreement. If memory serves, it was a criminal arrest and probation, and it might have been a let's see, it was a domestic violence issue. And I do not, if I recall, it may have been in Florida, it may have been in another state, and the board found out about it, or he reported on his initial application.
But it doesn't appear to be that related to drugs or alcohol.
No. His licensing history indicates that he did report a previous DUI, and I could not find specifics on it from 2008. So while those may be discoverable, I didn't have it in a licensing file or any place to review. But he did report it on a renewal application previously.
So initial licensure in 2000. DUI in 2008, DUI in
2017. Yeah. And the failure to report, obviously. So, he volunteered to disclose the DUI in 2008, but we did not find any record of the DUI when we did a background check.
Well, we did. The answer is yes, but we haven't done a background check since his initial licensing. So we don't have, I don't have records of that 2008 incident at the board this time. It wasn't in his
original consent.
Exactly.
Okay.
I have a report of, or a note of it in his licensing file.
And it appears that this consent agreement was signed in January of 2000.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, what else, board members?
We have the issue for the failure to report.
Correct.
I think we handled that through our separate process, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for that, I would make a motion that we offer a consent for a civil penalty in the amount of $250 for failure to report within the allocated 10 days.
Okay, so let's go with that one first. We have a motion and a second for the civil penalty for the failure to report. Is there any further discussion? All in favor, civil penalty, $250 payable within 90 days, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. Okay, that motion passes.
And is that a non-disciplinary?
A non-disciplinary.
Thank you.
The looking closer at this particular resolution, the court did recognize and treat it as it was a first DUI. I don't know the reasons for that. Sometimes different jurisdictions, if you get a first DUI in Glendale, you may get a first DUI in Mesa or something. I don't know the details of that. There are no direct patient care allegations that we're aware of.
That was going to be my question. Do we have any other complaints regarding the
We have nothing else on file that for which we've taken action or reviewed or anything like that.
And his case is closed.
His criminal case is closed, correct?
Right.
It's just unfortunate that he couldn't be here to help clarify.
Right.
The timeline, that's what I'm struggling with.
There's no evidence of the 2008 yet reported.
There's
no evidence that exists other than him saying
it. Yeah.
But personally, I would be in favor of us moving this to an informal, requesting board staff to complete a background file to see what background files we can get for his criminal history. And then he would get an invitation to be here.
And so you want to see if it shows something other than this, like the 2008 one or anything else?
Well, I can go two ways, right? We have an RCP who has, according to him, he had a DUI in 2008 and a DUI in 2017. So there's two DUIs. But yet the documents that I have don't show two DUIs. It shows that this was a first offense. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't have enough information to make a solid decision of my own. Because I could go either way.
And if the board staff doesn't find anything else additional to what I hear.
2008, you could run into records being redacted or destroyed at local courts, that sort of thing. It's right there in that time frame.
I guess my hang up on that is, so he's saying it exists, and so we find it and it exists. We're still kind of where we are right now. We're in a closed case from 2018, that he told us about, and a closed case from 2017 that he's also told us about. So where are we different than we are right now, I guess is my question.
I think I'd like to know what the resolution was, though, back in 2008, whether it was just, you know, classes he had to go to or a fine or whatever, and if that was all handled appropriately and then dismissed. And then now we've got this other one here. I'd kind of like to know what the outcome was of the 2008 or if it even exists. I mean, he says it does, but...
If the board is going to move towards tabling this or referring it to informal, I would suggest you rescind the previous motion because it kind of starts muddying up since it's all kind of intertwined. So I would not like to send out an order at this point. It would essentially look like you were closing the case. It gets a little confusing. So just a suggestion if that's the direction the board would like to go.
And Kathy, you have no evidence, no paperwork, no self-reported on an application for renewal.
And correct. And in 2008, I'm not sure that the board vetted DUI reports the same way. What I've discovered is DUI reports back in that time frame may not have been open as a case. The board was just, thank you for the report, the court handles it, and we don't even do an investigation on it. There's a large gap in time here.
Yeah.
So just the two in and of itself, in my review of this, is not does not increase the severity of this particular plea agreement. If this one were a DUI, an extreme DUI, or something like that, I think the evidence would say we probably need to look at it closer to see if there's that carryover into patient care. I'm happy to go try to find more records. I'm not sure what we're going to find.
So the court's treated this as a first offense. I would be comfortable accepting this as a first offense.
And just leaving it at the civil penalty.
That's where I'm going to.
Okay.
We have no...
We're talking 10 years.
Okay. So we're talking 10 years, oh yeah.
Okay.
Just for future reference, what's the cost of a background check?
You know, I'm not sure that, and Frankie can disagree with me after I get done speaking here, but I don't think we have the authority to do a background check, a criminal background check, now that somebody's licensed.
It's not a criminal background check for investigatory purposes. I mean, you're doing a background check. It's not an official background check. It's you know, we do the public record searches. The searches of the, you know, the jails and the court records.
So
that's a little bit different from doing a background check. He would be completing the investigation by finding more information.
So we're not going to be able to run his fingerprints and do nationwide, have you been arrested for anything. It's going to be subpoenas to Superior Court. Right, and then the only way you know, sometimes the local courts don't even report criminal cases to the Supreme Court, so it doesn't even show up in the public record. So,
sorry, you wouldn't find it.
I don't know. I can't. I don't want to sound like it can't be done. I don't know.
Well, more often than not, a licensee does not tell us something and it shows up, as opposed to it not showing up and they tell us. Yeah.
So maybe it was out of state.
I don't know. Okay, so we're kind of at the point where we've already done the civil penalty. Unless somebody has another motion or wants to rescind the original one, I think this one is done. We've already voted on it. Does anyone have any other kind of motion that they care to make?
No.
Okay.
So the intent of the first motion was $250 civil penalty resolves the entire case. I just want to make sure.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Tell you the report.
Okay.
But we still expect him to send you whatever material he's going to send.
Are you okay with that?
Well, he already said that was from the previous case. Oh, that was the prior case. Okay. He's already said everything.
I want him to send this one too.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We are going to go to R2, consideration and action on formal complaint hearings. I think we're going to be changing up the guards up here. Is 9/23 on August 16, 2018, and this is the time set for a formal hearing before the Arizona Board of Respiratory Care Examiners. In case number C003875-18-001300, which is the case of Barbara Regis. I am Tracy Kagan, I'm chair of the board, and we will have board introductions again since we're in the formal setting.
Jose Gonzalez, vice chair.
Kathy Rainier, board member.
Alan Crawford, board member.
Michael Butler, board member.
Jack Crawford, executive director.
Elizabeth Campbell, assistant attorney general. Representing the board.
Frankie Schenkberg, assistant attorney general, representing the state.
Okay, thank you. This is the administrative hearing before the board, and we will use the following procedures. All persons who speak must speak loudly and clearly so statements can be recorded, and only one person can speak at a time. To begin the hearing, each side may make a brief opening statement. The state will call its witness first and offer documents as evidence. The chair will rule on the admissibility of evidence. Licensee may then cross-examine each witness, and the state may ask additional questions. Board members may then ask questions of the witness, and if board members question a witness, the parties may ask additional questions. After the state presents all witnesses, licensee will present his or her witnesses and may offer documents as evidence. Licensee may testify as a witness and may call other witnesses, and the state may cross-examine each witness and licensee. If board members question a witness, the parties may ask additional questions. Each party will make a closing statement, and after closing arguments, the board will deliberate and make a decision. Okay.
Chair members of the board, the state would like to make a motion to deem the allegations admitted pursuant to ARS 3235-53K. The board has the authority to impose discipline pursuant to the allegations stated within this complaint and notice of hearing if your licensee fails to respond to the complaint within 30 days of being properly served. 3235-53K requires that a licensee respond in writing to the board within 30 days after a notice is served pursuant to subsection J of the same section. The board may consider a licensee's failure to respond within this time frame as an admission by default to the allegations. The board may then take any disciplinary action allowed by this chapter without conducting a hearing. In this case, board staff mailed a copy of the complaint notice of hearing to respondent on June 27, 2018 via certified mail, U.S. Postal Service, and by regular mail to respondent's address of record with the board, and also by email to their most current electronic mail address. The service of process was complete on June 27, 2018. The certified mailing has not been claimed by respondent, and has actually been returned back to the office. However, the documents sent via regular mail to her address of record have not been returned to the board, and documents regarding this investigation that were previously sent were also not returned as undeliverable. The documents sent to respondent by electronic mail were delivered as or returned as undeliverable. When a certified mail is returned unclaimed, the state must take additional reasonable steps to attempt to provide notice. One reasonable step would be for the state to send the notice by regular mail because regular mail requires no signature and can be left at the address, increasing the chance of actual notice. Here, board staff did send by regular mail and went beyond the reasonable measures by also sending the notice by electronic mail, even though this type of service was unsuccessful. The state was required to take additional steps, but is not required to conduct an open-ended search of government records for this individual. Licensees are required by law and by rule to update their place of record within 10 days after a change. Further, a party to an administrative action must make a change of address within 5 days of that change. No notice of address change has ever been received by this board. Thus, the board has no reason to believe that the current address of record is incorrect. In this case, we have sent the notice of hearing and a complaint to their respondent's address of record on file with the board. There's no updated change of address since at least March 21st when this case first opened. And this respondent was properly noticed of the formal hearing and as of August 2nd has failed to respond to the complaint within 30 days. Therefore, the state requests that the factual allegations and alleged violations stated within my complaint notice of hearing be deemed as admitted and the board take disciplinary action without conducting a hearing today.
Okay, thank you. Is there a motion granting or denying the state's motion to deem allegations admitted?
I motion to deem.
Second. We have a motion and a second. We are in a formal setting, so we'll do a roll call vote, yes? Only for discipline.
This can be only for discipline. This can be a voice vote.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second to grant the motion to deem. Do we have any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. That motion passes.
And then I'll make a motion to adopt the alleged violations as conclusions of law.
Well, usually this is done in a two-part. One, adopt the factual allegations as findings of fact, and then you'll make a second motion to adopt the alleged violations as conclusions of law, and then a third motion, which would be the voice vote imposing discipline.
Okay, so I will ask, is there a motion to adopt findings of fact?
So I make a motion to adopt findings of fact.
We have a motion and a second to adopt finding of fact. Do we have any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay. Okay, that motion passes. Do we have a motion to adopt conclusions of law? Wait, Jeff,
so
I said something not right.
For the minutes, if I would suggest that you would make the motion to adopt the factual, I'm sorry, the alleged violations as conclusions of the law.
Okay. Does anyone want to make that motion?
I'll make a motion to adopt the alleged violations as conclusions of law.
I'm sorry.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed say nay. And that motion passes. Okay. And are we opposing any discipline? That's where we're at now.
So we have not received any correspondence from RCP Regis, is that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the board, we haven't received any written correspondence. I will tell you that I got a telephone call from her late yesterday afternoon. She basically stated that she does have all the notices. She has everything. She explained to me her employment at West Valley Hospital, and it was closed. And she was hoping that she would get picked up by the new owner. That didn't happen. She's very disgruntled with that. And in her words, she's done. She did tell me that she did have a continuing education. She does have it. But it was at the facility with the training officer, something to that effect. I did explain to her what the board has done in these situations with similar fact patterns, and did tell her that if she was not here, and that the board could revoke her license. So that was, I had a conversation with her early on in this process, and that's the only other communication that the board has gotten that I'm aware of.
Okay.
So I'm sorry, Jack, I missed the first part of that. West Valley Hospital did...
They closed, or Maryvale, what did I say?
West Valley.
Maryvale closed.
Yeah.
And she had been an RT there for 20 plus, 33 years. And she was not employed after they closed. So, you know.
They closed in December of like.
Correct. Last year.
Yes.
A while back.
Yes.
Okay. So when she renewed, she claimed that she had the 20 CEUs because, based on this conversation, it appears that they may have been in her file at her employer, with her employer, not with her personally.
And so I could tell it was an emotional conversation for her. I think she was frustrated with the hospital closing, frustrated that she didn't have any more employment. And this whole notice thing and this particular complaint review was just an aggravation to her. It wasn't a long conversation, but I could hear in her voice, you know, after a 33-year career, not having more employment. And
But she received all of these notices.
Yes.
And chose to ignore all of these notices all along the way.
I can only tell you she said she has all the paperwork. Okay.
But she doesn't. Her employer has all the paperwork.
No, she has all of her notices. She knew she was supposed to be here all these different times.
From the board for the hearing. She said she had all of her CE.
Physically with her?
No.
No.
I didn't ask her that, and I didn't get an answer for it. But I did try to explain to her, again, the board position of, you did sign a renewal. You said you had it all. This is a random audit. We're not treating you any differently than we treat anybody else. So she was aware of what we were doing today and what this case was about, because I had that conversation with her on the telephone.
If she can't produce her CEUs, she shouldn't be licensed to practice.
Well, and she admittedly has every one of these notices where she's been asked to be here.
Yeah.
And at some point been told she needs to be here and has still ignored it.
Well, and there's an order that states you are required to provide a written response.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Thank you for that information.
Did she state that she tried to get copies of this? Because Abrazo has a corporate office where you can request.
Madam Chair, Vice Chairman Gonzalez, I didn't ask that question.
Okay.
I tried to stick to the rule, which was the random audit, providing proof of continued education. I didn't ask her if she tried to get it. From anybody else.
Just because the hospital closes doesn't mean that everything is burned to the ground. I mean, there's ways to approach the corporate office and obtain stuff. So, okay.
Okay.
Anyone have a...
So my theory on it is it's your responsibility to maintain your CEUs, not your employer's responsibility. You signed an affidavit at the time of your renewal stating that you had the 20 CEUs. You clearly did not physically have the 20 CEUs when asked to provide copies of them as proof. You also failed to abide by the orders that were sent to your home stating that you needed to respond to the board. You didn't do that either.
Correct. So it was in April, not like last week. She's had many weeks to get what she needs. I'm really concerned about this.
We're way past concerns.
I think I need a motion to revoke her license.
Okay, so we have a motion. Do we have a second for revocation?
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second for revocation. Any further discussion?
Would suspending that be a little less?
What are we hoping to accomplish?
Well, I mean, she lost her job after being in the field for 30-some years.
That was 8 months ago, though.
Yeah, but still, you know, I mean, people could be in a funk or something, you know.
But we're suspending her license for a period of time for her to accomplish what?
To hopefully get her act together and get her CEUs in her or make some type of motion forward. But
so if we were, I'm brainstorming here. So work with me. So if we're talking about suspension, we would suspend her license because we are fearful of the public's safety that she needs to provide evidence of educational completion of 20 CEUs within 6 months, a year. What's our typical suspension?
Madam Chair, members of the board, just from the staff perspective, and I'm not trying to tell you how to vote, you've had similar cases coming forward this board within the last year, 2 years, and it's always been the same final action. Mm-hmm. My suggestion is that you would keep that consistency with similar fact patterns.
Right, she's had ample time to do whatever has been required. She's had this original audit notice went out when? The original audit?
March. February 5th, 2018.
February of 18.
Okay.
She's had all kinds. And admittedly, I have all these notices. She knew it was required to send them in. She knew it was required to have them. She knew it was required to send them in when it came audit time.
To respond to them.
At that point, and I'd have to look back, but we probably offered a consent,
which
wasn't signed, which then went to an informal. She knew she had to be here for an informal. She wasn't here for an informal. Now we're at a formal, and she's still not here.
We did.
There were time to do what?
We offered her
a
consent for 520 CEUs.
Mm-hmm.
I surrender. I'm good.
And that's what the discussion is about, though. Okay, is there any further discussion? Okay, so we are in a formal setting, so we'll do a roll call vote, and the motion on the table is revocation of the license. Sir?
Jose Gonzalez, aye.
Kathy Rainier, aye.
Alan Crawford, aye.
Michael Beller, aye.
Tracy Kagan, aye. That motion passes.
Thank you, board.
Okay. Yeah, we have to switch out and go to other things. Sorry.
No.
Okay. Wait. Now I lost my agenda. Okay. So we're going to go to R3, which is consideration action on informal interviews. And the board will call the case of Christopher Jones, case C003878-18-011884. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you,
ma'am. Madam Chair, members of the board, this is an informal interview. The allegation in this case is that RCP Jones abandoned patients at Sunview Health and Rehabilitation because he showed up for shift, got his assignments, and then left that particular healthcare establishment to go work shifts at another healthcare institution in Mesa. This particular case revolves around some eyewitness accounts. RCP Jones had sent a text message to his supervisor stating that he had an emergency and had to leave. Sunview states that he left the facility without giving his assignments to anybody else. RCP Jones, on the other hand, states that when he left, he did divide up his shift and give patients to other people that were on staff. At the last review of this case, the board asked for additional information for Sunview. That is reflected in your materials on page 498, which is in response to how many patients were assigned to him when he got to his shift, and then how many patients that each of the remaining RCPs had after he left. So you can review that information on page 498. I don't have anything else unless you have questions.
Okay.
Do
you have a question for Jack?
I have a question for
Jack. Okay.
So this correspondence on 498, this came from the current respiratory director?
Yes.
At Sunview?
Okay. Yes.
It does not appear that any additional staff was brought in, correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Does anyone else have any questions for Jack? Okay. Good morning. Thank you for being here. As we get started, I would ask that you raise your right hand. And you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. So we're going to give you a moment to tell us what you want to tell us about this situation, and then we will likely have questions for you.
Not a problem. It's pretty much, as Jack mentioned, when I got on shift, it was like 5:53, I think, give or take, when I clocked in. I took a report from a day shift, and then Banner called me and said, "Hey, Chris, where are you?" And I was like, "Well, I'm here at Sunview, but that's supposed to be at Banner." And I was like, "You can't keep places at once." I was like, "What am I going to do?" I spoke to my therapist, Lee, told me, I'm like, supposed to be two different areas, and I just kind of provided my assignment. I called my director, well, text my director, saying that I can't work there today, and he pretty much let me go. I didn't start patient care. I didn't get any medications out, and it's just an oversight, and I apologize. And as a character witness, I brought up my manager from Banner Desert.
Board members, any questions?
Okay.
You what?
I got a question.
Okay.
So, if I'm understanding the timeline correctly, you went to Sunview, you clocked in, you did take report.
Yes.
Okay. So you took ownership of those 13 patients that were assigned to you, correct?
Yes.
Okay. How many other employees were you working with that night?
Nearly 5 or 6.
Okay. And just in your opinion, the 13 patients that you took report on that you were assigned to, is 13 a normal capacity at Sunview?
Usually. Sometimes more. Usually around 10, 12, it varies.
What happened when you texted your supervisor?
I waited for my text back, and then when I got the text message, I just left. I was kind of enraged at firing me. And at that point, I was looking for my radio, because I was in the radio. And that was about it.
So did you give report for your 13 patients to any of
yours? I gave it to Lee. He's a therapist next to me. I gave him my report, and it's all in the folder, too.
So you had another therapist. Was that your lead therapist?
No, lead therapist didn't come until 8. So we have a core therapist together at 6, and the lead comes in at 8.
So when you gave report, you did not give individual report to other people in your department?
No.
How do you keep track of your schedule when you work?
I do 2 schedules. One's working both jobs. Barry gives me a schedule, and then Cindy gives me a schedule. I kind of correspond them, but looking at both of them, one particular day, I got it mixed up. And it's error in my part.
How come you didn't tell Banner, "I'm sorry, I can't come into work today"?
That's probably the smartest thing to do, but I just panicked. And that's the honest truth.
Which one would you say is your more focused and or high priority job?
I would say Banner Desert, because I work in the ER there, and it's a place to grow. But that's not an excuse for what happened that day. That day I provided bad judgment. I should have called him, but like, I'm already here. I'm going to call up the band and work here. That's what I should do, but I panicked. Again, that's no excuse. I'm sure I penalized pretty bad for it.
I'm not sure of your explanation there. You panicked because if you would have said no to Banner, you're afraid you wouldn't have been able to work there anymore, or?
It was my full-time employment, and somebody used my PRN job, and it was an error.
So it is a priority. It's your full-time gig.
And I should have known that when Chrissy, the Tower Jets, the lead night shift supervisor, called me. I should just say, I'm like, send me down. I can't work today. Just call off. That's probably the best thing I should have done. But in that moment, I just panicked. And I'm here now because of that decision.
Can I just like to remind the board, I think the last time this came in front of the board, there was an issue of whether or not this RCP was fired.
Okay.
And according to the text message on page 516, he was fired, it looks like.
So what time did you leave, Sunday?
Like 6:30 maybe? Because I was, after I got the text message, I was just looking at it in disbelief because I never missed any days. I barely didn't call out sick. And I was like, all right, I just got fired because I couldn't work that particular day. And I was so frustrated. I was just kind of enraged a little bit. But I understand that.
So the nice thing about text messages is it gives a nice timeline of events. And so I appreciate the page 516 that you sent it in a picture of this conversation that you had with your supervisor. In regards to the question about abandonment, that seems to be the allegation or the concern as to why you're here. And at 6:18, you sent a text message to Rico stating that you needed to leave. At 6:26, you were fired based on this text message. Correct me if I'm misinterpreting.
Right.
And it says, this is not acceptable. It's way too busy. I'm sorry, but I have to let you go. Make sure that you turn in your radio so they don't charge you for it.
And adaptable.
At 6:26, when you got that email, you were terminated. You had not left the building yet. Is that correct?
Yes.
You were still in the building.
Well, right in the parking lot. I was waiting, looking at the text messages, baffled. Like, how do I get fired?
So you left the building?
Yes.
You had already handed off report at that time?
Yes.
Do you have this text?
I don't. No. It was a while ago.
So you didn't send this to the board. This came in from. So you don't even know you don't even remember what you said.
Not exactly.
So you said you had an emergency. And this is what's quoted. Hey, Rico, an emergency came up. And I have to leave and I'll split the assignment. What was the emergency?
Schedule conflict.
Okay. So you're in the position of, it was monetary. Was it a monetary motivation for you to work for Banner instead of Sunview because you got paid more there?
No.
Do you think anybody else would have known to tell the board that? Oh, yeah, he said he went over there because he gets paid more over there. Do you think you mentioned that to anybody there, that we could have had that information here?
I might have mentioned it.
Okay.
Because, it's night shifting. Sundry doesn't pay as much as other places. It's not like a huge secret.
So it's not an emergency. It's a motivation to keep your full-time job.
I suppose so.
Okay.
It's interesting. You claim that you got this text message that you were terminated when you were sitting in your vehicle in the parking lot. But yet, there's written statements from people at Sunview that state you informed them you were fired before you left the building. So, I just find it.
Madam Chair, members of the board, investigations are confidential. Investigations are confidential. He hasn't asked for or received a lot of the information that's in this investigation at this point in time. So you have information in front of you that he may not have or remember from when it actually happened.
Do you feel like you left, just so we have a timeline, do you feel like you left before? Okay, so you got your report at what time did you get report?
Maybe like 6:02 or something.
And you got the call from Banner when?
Maybe 6:05.
So shortly after.
I remember I went to get a candy bar to get back to the assignment. And that's when the phone call came in.
And then you gave report?
Oh,
you passed off your assignment right after that?
I spoke to Lee, and then the therapist, and I texted Rico. And I went back to Lee and gave him my assignment.
And then you left?
Yeah.
And then you got the reply from Rico?
Yeah.
I'm torn on the whole abandonment thing, because if he was fired, he didn't abandon it. But if he left before he got that...
So were you in the building when you got fired?
Yes, in the lobby.
So you weren't quite out to your car.
I was making it that way, though. But I was still
you were heading in that direction, yeah. But you were still technically in the building when you got fired.
Yes.
Was there anybody around that you mentioned it to that you were fired?
No, I was pretty upset that I got fired.
So this incident... What concerns you the most, the fact that you were fired or the fact that you're here?
Both. It's just poor judgments and oversight, and it's something that I will never repeat again. I also want a character witness want to have.
I understand. I heard you. I understand that. It's always good to have a character witness. But my concern, personally, is your judgment and what happens to your patients afterwards. You say the usual level is 10-12 patients, and with you leaving, that significantly increases everybody else's load. Whether you were fired. Or not. And you say the other person doesn't get there until 8 o'clock, so you've got that window of time that the loads are going to be substantially heavier.
Of course.
So does that mean poor care? I don't know. But what it means to me is that, there's a judgment thing happening there. And, I can understand wanting to go to your full-time job and, whether it's monetary or whether it's security, whatever the issue is in your mind that made you decide to go over there, that's only you know that. But the fact is, my concern is how, were those patients okay after you left?
And anytime they've been there for almost a year, whenever a staff gets there and they're sick or whatever, and they leave, all your patients get distributed to the rest of the therapists. So then there being two patients extra for each therapist. And then the lead does come in. But we don't really ever need the lead's help when he's there for help. That's no excuse for what I did. That's usually what happens.
So when the lead comes in, he doesn't take any of the patients from you guys?
He'll offer, but usually the therapists there are really productive and good at what they do, so they don't need additional assistance. But he is there to help us if we need the assistance. Because the lead is their gating line.
So this is where I'm struggling, because... We have a director who terminated an employee, stated before he terminated an employee that workloads were already high. Terminated the employee, but yet didn't bring in any additional support to support the workload.
I think that's my struggle. I mean, he stays, he gave report, so in my head, it's not total abandonment because somebody else has taken over those patients that he had. But if you were that short staffed, why would you terminate somebody?
So in the patient care setting, and this is true for an ER, or for any emergency or pre-hospital care, that when you receive report or you take responsibility for a patient, that then you... have ownership or an obligation to ensure that treatment is provided to that patient first and foremost, right? So if you get a secondary assignment, you can't abandon your patient. And that, so where I'm stuck with this case is the the breakdown or lack of judgment with around prioritizing the appropriate conflicts and weighing that against obviously his livelihood and full-time, his primary concern for his full-time job. So the question for me, though, is ultimately what's appropriate for the disciplinary action in this situation and what have we done in the past?
Madam Chair, members of the board, just from my memory, we've had some patient abandonment allegations come before the board, but I don't even recall those fact patterns leading to a letter of concern or any disciplinary, non-disciplinary, disciplinary action. So I don't have a past decision to draw upon that's similar to this, where we have this kind of evidence.
I feel like once he was terminated, abandonment is now off the table. He passed off his patient. He used poor judgment, but he passed off his patients. Whether that made the low workloads for other people or not is almost, I don't want to say irrelevant, but that's not the point right now. He passed off his patients. He was, according to his words, in the building when he received, he wasn't where he was supposed to be, but he was in the building when he received a text that said, "You're fired, you gotta go." That's not abandonment any longer.
And your rule is very specific, that if you don't find that your RCP has actually neglected or abandoned that patient, which in the past we've had cases where RCPs fell asleep on the job, disappeared off the job,
different.
Like a lunch.
That's totally
that's
different.
Abandonment and neglect.
Yeah.
He was fired.
So the second part of your rule
job now.
The second part of your rule is whether or not he properly advised supervisory personnel that he was leaving his assignment. So like I said, your rule's got the two different parts to it.
The when he sent the text, he was already gone. That text is, "Hey, an emergency came up. I'll split up the assignment." That's his communication to the supervisor that I'm done. I'm not taking care of any more patients. I don't know how else to interpret that.
And had that been the end of the correspondence, and there had been nothing back that said, "I acknowledge what you just said, and I'm firing you," then I could be on board with an abandonment.
Say there wasn't anything. Well, but I guess I guess me putting myself in that position, if I got that text, "Oh, he's gone. Who's going to take care of those patients now?" Well, he split up the assignment. The firing after that is not, in my mind, is not indicative of whether or not he abandoned the patient.
We'll
just have to
agree and disagree on that. That's why people have opinions.
What's the rule that you just referenced?
It's R-445-214, number 10.
And that's just that rule. You have other ethical rules.
Oh,
all
absolutely.
Kinds of
the poor judgment, it was unprofessional. It concerns me. His judgment concerns me.
Yeah.
But I feel like the abandonment, which is what the allegation was, that he had patient abandonment when he was fired, that's off the table now.
But he handed his patient load off to some other people. He thought, well, I mean, that's no different than a night shift reporting off to a day shift and then cleaning the building. It's no different than day shift reporting off a night shift. You reported off patients to somebody else. You're no longer his responsibility. Doesn't matter where he got the text that he was fired, in my opinion, whether it's in the parking lot, whether it's in the ER, Banner Desert. He notified somebody he was leaving, "I'm going to split up my assignment." And there's evidence that he did get, other people got assignments. So I don't see how he abandoned anybody.
There was no patient safety.
There was no patient safety
events,
all in my
correct.
Head.
Uh-huh.
We don't know. I've asked for the records. I asked for the individual patient records. And so forth. That email is the only thing that I got back.
With the information we have available at the moment, there's been no patient events.
Correct. And no staff were brought in. Should that vets or whatever needed to be covered from a safety perspective, nothing else came in to cover his assignment. No other came in. So it's no different than he gave report to shift and went home for the day. I don't see patient abandonment at all.
I'm on board with that.
With judgment?
Yes. Absolutely. Unprofessional? Absolutely.
Yes.
But I can't be on board with the abandonment once he's fired and passed off his patients. but yeah. Specifically because he was terminated.
That's a good point. Right. Some of the allegation is that you have Sunview saying he didn't necessarily pass off assignments. You have him saying he did.
But we have proof that other people took over his patients by a patient count load. This person got two more patients. This person got three more patients. So his assignment was split up according to the supervisor's documentation.
Yeah. But I just have one quick question. We've all been in supervisory positions. Had you gotten this text, would you have acted any differently?
I would have. I would have made a phone call instead of a text message.
I would have grabbed my stethoscope and gone into the building, yes.
And my second thing I would have done is you need to stay there.
Right.
And if that wouldn't have been acceptable to him, then that would have been abandonment, right? Because I'm telling you.
That's where I'm at.
You've taken responsibility of those patients. You need to stay there.
But instead, I said, this is unacceptable. This is unacceptable. You're fired. Turn in your radio.
So in answer to your question, yes, I would have handled it differently.
Well, I would have too, but I'm just saying, I think there's a two-parter here. I mean, both the lead person or whoever the RICO person is handled badly, as well as having a really bad ethical issue here. And, you know, whether it's abandonment or not, there's an ethical issue you have to think about in your head. You know, juggling two jobs is always, you know, has potentially an issue to come up. So, you know, I think there's a whole lot of blame to go around here. But
would you be on board with a non-disciplinary letter of concern regarding his judgment?
I think that would be appropriate. I definitely am concerned with his judgment. Yes. That I say strong on, that I say right from the beginning, that concern, I just can't be on board with abandonment. Doesn't mean you guys can't. I'm just not feeling it when
I'd be on board
based
on
the circumstances, based on what we have. I don't feel like he abandoned.
Non-disciplinary letter of concern, because it wasn't abandonment.
It was?
Uh-huh. It was not abandonment. Then I'd be on board with the disciplinary.
Right. Okay, so do we have a motion for that?
I'll make a motion for a non-disciplinary letter of concern.
And the board is concerned that?
And the board is concerned that there was a lapse in judgment on his part related to the obligations of his assignments.
Okay. We have a motion. Did you guys
I'll
get
second.
That?
Yes.
You got what you needed? Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have any further discussion? All in favor of a non-disciplinary letter of concern, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Did you vote, Joe?
Aye.
Okay, I'm going to call for the question again. All in favor of a non-disciplinary letter of concern, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Okay, that motion passes, so. Okay.
So, what the board did is they issued a non-disciplinary action. It's called letter of concern. It's basically like an advisory letter. It's telling them not to allow these things to happen in the future. Appreciate your time, and thank you for coming down today, and thank your supervisor for coming down today.
Thanks.
Okay. We're going to jump back to R2. And we are back in the formal, and we'll be calling a case of Kathy Wintergerst. Make sure everyone gets their places again. Places, everyone. Okay, it is.
R2.
Yes, R22. It is now 10:04 a.m. on August 16th, still, right? 2018. This is the time set for the formal hearing before the Arizona Board of Respiratory Care Examiners in the case of Kathy Wintergerst, case C003859-18-010822. I am Tracy Kagan. I am chair of the board, and now we will do board introductions.
Jose Gonzalez, vice chair.
Kathy Rainier, board member.
Don Crawford, board member. Michael Bellew, board member.
Jack Crawford, executive director.
Elizabeth Campbell, Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the board.
Assistant Attorney General Frank Schenack, representing the state.
Okay, thank you. This is the administrative hearing before the board, and we will use the following procedures. All persons who speak must speak loudly and clearly so their statements can be recorded, and only one person can speak at a time. To begin the hearing, each side may make a brief opening statement. The state will call its witness first and may offer documents and evidence, and the chair will rule on admissibility of evidence. Licensee may then cross-examine each witness, and the state may ask additional questions. Board members may then ask questions of the witness, and if board members question a witness, the parties may ask additional questions. After the state presents its witnesses, licensee will present his or her witness and may offer documents as evidence. Licensee may testify as a witness and may call others to witness. The state may cross-examine each witness, and licensee may ask additional questions. And if the board members question a witness, parties may ask additional questions. Each party may make a closing statement, and after closing statements, the board will deliberate and then make a decision.
Okay, Chair, members of the board. The state would like to make a motion to deem the allegations admitted pursuant to ARS 3235-53K. The board has the statutory authority to impose discipline pursuant to the allegations stated within this complaint if your licensee fails to respond within 30 days of being properly served. The board may consider a licensee's failure to respond within this time frame as an admission by default to the allegations, and the board may then take disciplinary action allowed by the chapter without conducting that hearing. In this case, board staff mailed a copy of the complaint notice of hearing to respondent on June 27, 2018 via certified mail with return receipt requested and regular mail to respondent's address of record with the board, and also by electronic mail to respondent's most current email address. Services process was therefore complete on June 27, 2018. The certified mailing has not been claimed by respondent. This mailing has been returned to the board. However, all documents sent by regular mail have not been returned to the board, and documents regarding this investigation that were previously sent to respondent have not been returned as undeliverable. All documents sent by email were also not returned as undeliverable. When a certified mail notice is returned as claimed, state must take additional steps to provide notice. One reasonable step is to send the notice by regular mail, as regular mail requires no signature and can be left at the address, increasing the chances of actual notice. Here, board staff sent the notice by regular mail and went beyond the reasonable measures by also sending the notice by email. The state was required to take additional reasonable steps, but the state was not required to conduct an open-ended search of government records for this licensee. Licensees are also required to timely update their address of record with the board by rule within 10 days after a change in the address, or within 5 days once that party has been notified that they are a party to an administrative action. In this case, board staff mailed the hearing to the address of record on file, and respondent has not provided the board with an updated address since at least this board's last contact with her, which was by email on May 16, 2018, which was respondent's response to the board's invitation for informal interview stating that she would not attend. Respondent has never notified the board of an actual address change. Therefore, the board has no reason to believe that the current address of record is not correct. Therefore, respondent was properly noticed and as of August 2nd has failed to respond. Therefore, the state respectfully requests that the factual allegations and alleged violations stated within this complaint notice of hearing be deemed admitted and that the board take this disciplinary action without conducting a hearing today.
Okay, thank you. Is there a motion granting or denying the state's motion to deem allegations admitted?
No motion.
So we have a motion.
I'll second.
And a second and a half. Any discussion? All in favor of granting the motion to deem, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. Okay, that motion passes. Is there a motion to adopt parties and jurisdiction statement of factual allegations in the complaint of notice as findings of fact?
So moved.
Second. A motion and a second. Any discussion on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay. That motion passes. And is there a motion to adopt the alleged violations in the complaint of notice of hearing as conclusions of law?
So moved.
Second. Motion and a second. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay. Joe, did you vote and I just didn't hear it?
Yes.
Okay, I just didn't hear it. Okay. Motion passes. And is there any motion for an order of discipline? Or a discussion about that?
Did we ever send a I'm looking through here and I can't find anything, that's why I'm asking. Did we ever send a offer of a consent.
No. This was the facts in this were
different.
Not a standard, you know, report of a DUI. It was a pretty severe DUI and discipline, so we didn't think it was the standard consent type of a case.
As she, the courts have gone through their whole
yes.
That her case is
sentencing was on August 9th of 17.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
Jack, you said you did talk to her. I'm sorry, I didn't.
There was an email, only one communication with her, May 16th, 2018, in response to the informal interview request. She states, it is my understanding there is to be a hearing regarding my licensure. I am writing to let you know that I will not be able to attend the meeting due to my circumstances of moving out of the state. With all due respect, I am begging the board to have mercy on me and consider my 35-year career as a respected respiratory therapist. I am guilty of the charges brought against me and regret what I have done in the past. I have changed my life and continue to make amends for my mistakes. I am begging all of you to please not take my career from me, as this is all I know and love to do. I have been sober for over 3 years now and continue to take random drug testing every month and meet with my probation officer on a monthly basis. I humbly ask that you take this into consideration in determining your decision. I will do anything that the board asks of me in continuing my career. Thank you for your time. This is the one and only response my agency or this board has ever received.
Thank you. So she's not in the state working.
So she says.
So she says. Okay. So you're right.
And
I suspect that she's dual licensed. I think she's licensed in Colorado. My assumption would be that she's going. I think Colorado is her home state. I think she's probably in Colorado working, or that's where she's residing. But that's an assumption.
That's been the one and only response through this entire process.
Right.
This was from 2014.
Yeah, this.
Yeah. It was not reported on her last two licensing applications, nor was it ever individually reported.
Yeah.
The arrest would have been reported on the 2015 application, and the charge and conviction would have been reported on the next application.
She did not report this to the board at all. This came in from a separate source.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Anyone have thoughts, motion, thoughts on the motion?
So essentially for 4 years, you signed an affidavit for renewal twice in that 4-year term, and twice you fraudulently completed that application.
Correct. Yep.
I make a motion for revocation of licensure.
Myself.
We have a motion and a second for revocation. Any further discussion? We will do a roll call vote.
Jose Gonzalez, aye.
Kathy Rainier, aye.
Alan Crawford, aye.
Michael Beller, aye.
Tracy Kagan, aye.
Okay.
That motion passes.
Thank you, board.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Beth.
All right. We will go back. So everybody that was on the agenda for an agenda item has signed in and been seen?
I have not signed in. I'm on R3.
Tell me your name.
Bethany Vieira.
Thank you. Okay, so we are jumping actually back to R3, consideration and action on informal interviews. And the board will call the case of Bethany Vieira, case C003822-18-010719.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is a case where RCP Vieira self-reported a DUI that was originally from an arrest or charge, from May 17th of 2016. This particular case has been in front of the board a couple times. We've continued it. I think the board was waiting for a resolution, if there was one, out of City of Mesa. I think it has now been resolved.
Yes, sir.
And hopefully our CPVR can give you an update on what was happening with the court.
So I believe last time I got a little ahead of myself, and I forget that I'm the only one in here that's been dealing with this for almost a year, so I'm not quite sure where to start. But the original charge was in 2016. I intended to go to trial for two reasons. The arresting officer did not charge me. He did not. He let me go. He did not charge me. And the second is that I took that medication as prescribed by my doctor. That's why I intended to go to trial. That's why it's continued for this long. And in that 3 years, the main witness to my case is this prescribing physician who has since died. That greatly weakened my case, and I continue to try to press to go to trial. And 2 days before, it's been continued several times. One officer was on FMLA leave, certain things like that. But 2 days before my trial, the prosecution offered to try this as a first offense DUI, which would change the fines, but it would change the jail time from 2 days versus 30 days. And I was encouraged by my legal counsel to accept that plea. So I have since accepted a plea of guilty. Now, there is a incident in 2012 before I was a respiratory therapist for a DUI, and I brought with me talk screens from both. It is my hope to show that it is not the same situation. I'm not sure how specific you'd like me to go into about that yet, but...
This is your time to
all right,
be
so
whatever.
In 2012, before I was an RT... There was a DUI, and it shows that an excessive DUI for 0.5 to 0.19 is a BAC. Now, in 2016, I took that medication as prescribed, meaning my doctor told me I could have one drink and take that medication, which is what I did. And here you can see that my... the medication is within clinical range, meaning I wasn't popping Xanax like M&M's, within clinical range, and my alcohol is well under the limit at 0.05. I'm bringing those to try and convince you that this is not a pattern of reckless behavior. In 2012, before I was an RT, this was excessive, and in the 6 years I've been an RT, I'm sure I'm not the only respiratory therapist that has walked out of an alcohol-related trauma or cared for a cirrhosis patient that hasn't walked away with a lesson to take to heart. So I wanted to show the actual talk screenings in the hope that you see this is not a pattern of behavior that needs to be followed up with a year of probation and drug screenings, especially since I no longer have a prescription. I'm obviously seeing a different psychiatrist, and I get different medication, and I don't take this anymore.
Can you, it might help the board to know what you pled to. A little, do you have the actual plea agreement with you? Copy of it? I have been unable to obtain one from the court. We have a subpoena outstanding with the court.
Okay, let me have a look here. I do believe I have that.
So did you plead to the DUI or to the with the drugs or the drugs vapor?
One says plea of guilty, one says dismissed, and I have the articles here, but I'm not sure which is which. Let's see.
Can I share a copy of that? Is this your own copy?
Yes.
Okay. So the other part of it was, you said, was 2 days suspended sentence, so 30 days, 2 days in jail. What about classes?
Yes, I am responsible for completing alcohol substance abuse screenings.
Okay.
Yes.
Ignition interlock device?
Yes.
And do you already have it on your vehicle?
This all just came up, you know, okay. I was in court at the very end of last month. So okay. I just recently got the rest of the paperwork from the MDV with those details that will be a part of the order from Arizona, yes.
How long do you have to have that interlock device on?
The order says 12 months. My attorney has said that I can opt to have that reduced to 6, but that I'm not sure. The order's for 12 right now.
And how long are your classes for?
So I actually have that substance abuse screening today. It'll be either 16 hours or 36 hours, depending on my screening today.
What they find.
Yes.
So for the board's information, she had originally been charged with two things here. One was 1381A1, which is it's intoxication to the slightest degree. So anything below a 0.08 but above a 0.05 for alcohol. And then she had an A3 charge on here, which is for drug metabolites. That was dismissed pursuant to the plea. So it's to the slightest degree, unsupervised probation, plus fees.
And I'm reading the police officer's report from January 26, 2016. You were pulled over for what reason?
So he initially saw that I had a front headlight out, and there was front end damage to my car. So in his audio interview, he says his concern was that I hit something. So he was coming the opposite direction, so he saw the headlight out. When he got behind me, he noticed that my car registration tags were expired. And so then he started to follow me. And that's the first driving impairment, I'm not sure what word to use, that he noticed was he said that my car drifted into the bike lane, that my tire was fully in the bike lane and came back.
The board might appreciate a little update on where you're working right now, what your plans are for
your session. I've been traveling for this past year, and it's something I really enjoyed and plan to continue doing. I came back from Omaha in December, January, and that's when I found out about this whole situation because my car had been in storage. I hadn't been driving for a year because my previous assignment was in Hawaii, and I didn't need my car there. So my hope is to continue traveling, and I've barely been able to eke out some PRN hours while I've been here trying to fight this case. It's the only reason I've been here since January. This case has been extended by 3 weeks to a month, almost every month since February, March, to try and get all the witnesses in the courtroom together. So my hope is to continue traveling. And I don't plan to continue to use an Arizona license either. It expires in a couple weeks on my birthday. So I'm not trying to get away with anything, and I'm sure you don't want any RT, no matter what state they're working in, to be out there with an issue. But it's my hope that I'm just going to be out of your hair real soon anyway. So I'm working on my Colorado license, and it is my hope, as when I apply for a new license, I have to report if there's ever been a disciplinary action against me. So it's my hope that I can continue to say no, that it has not, that there is not.
So the charge that she pleaded guilty to?
Yes.
It's to impaired to the slightest degree?
To the slightest degree.
Because she blew a 0.05?
Yeah, it's if the officer can point to any of these, so they're called NHTSA nighttime driving cues, if they can point to a certain number of cues and then also put that together with a field sobriety test, they can usually prove the lesser charge even if they blow below a 0.08, kind of a catch-all. But in Arizona, if you're below a 0.05, you're presumptively sober. So it's to catch the people between the 0.05 and the 0.08.
And she was at 0.05.
And she was at 0.05, but because she had the extra medication in her system, she probably was exhibiting cues of impairment.
Which
and so they had to... they
correct.
That's the charge that everybody gets when the officer's not quite sure what to do.
Right. And not only prescribed, but on the screen, came out within normal limits for the medication. So that part was discussed.
Okay.
And she's going to the court to relay.
So when did, how did you know about this?
She reported, didn't she?
She reported when she was charged. I don't remember if it was on the renewal
It was within the charging time frame.
But she was never put under arrest.
I was charged once the blood metabolites came back. Now, the officer told me wait 6 months. It takes that long. I did wait 6 months. I waited 8 months. And that's when I went to Hawaii, my first travel assignment.
I'm assuming the city didn't have the ability to charge because it was a .05. There's a margin of error when you go to court, and so typically if it's within that margin of error, they won't charge unless they have blood results back. So I'm just assuming from my time with the city that's probably what they did in this case.
So she reported it to us.
Mm-hmm.
She's been in contact with us because I have in my notes that last month when she was supposed to be here, she had requested that we postpone this because she was... because of the whole FMLA thing. I mean, I've got all that documented. She's got all of her she's got her ducks in a row there. Like, it appears she's doing everything she's trying, she can do to get this cleared up. She's taken the lesser plea or whatever that's called, whatever that is.
Yeah, she took the lowest charge in
to get
exchange
it done.
For the dismissal of the drug charge.
To get it done.
To get it finished, yeah.
Okay.
In our normal practices to for defense, court's taking care of it, so we typically dismiss.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to make a motion to dismiss.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second for dismissal. Any further discussion?
I have a question.
Okay.
Was this an MD or DO?
It was an MD, yes. And perhaps he should not have told me that. I will say, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, I will say that... this is the first psychiatrist I've ever seen, and it was the first time I was exhibiting anxiety symptoms and needed to see a psychiatrist. It's the first time I was diagnosed with anxiety, and the first time I was prescribed a benzo. I've never had Xanax before in my life. So I believed him. He wasn't empty, yes.
He said it was okay. He really said it was okay to have a drink with
yes.
Xanax.
Yes, and that is what I continue, you know, plan to... you know, make a case for in trial until he passed, and could no longer attest to that, obviously.
Did you ever read the bottle, on the prescription bottle? Did it say on the bottle, don't drink with these medications?
I believe it's a warning that says may.
I think
it's
a warning, and it says may cause drowsiness.
May cause drowsiness.
Yes.
Please be aware if you're using heavy machinery or driving. It's the standard if you're taking a drowsy drug.
Okay. There's actually pictures of the bottles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The cat holder.
So I think the motion's consistent with what we've done in the past.
Okay, any other discussion?
No.
All in favor of dismissal of the case of Bethany Vieira, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. That motion passes.
Thank you very much for your time.
Good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, Jack.
What's that?
My thing went away. It's gone.
We're going to take a quick. It's probably going to be like 7 minutes start of time. Quick 5 minute break.
Okay,
we are back. We are going to R3 1, and the board will call the case of Jandy Span, case 2018-RCE-0021.
Is RCP Span here? Madam Chair, members of the board, this is an issue of for review. The allegation is that RCP.
Review. We're informal.
Yes.
Oh, we're not on.
Nope.
R3,
we're
informal.
Sorry. Okay, bear with me a second here. Which one are we doing?
Span.
I just missed both. Okay.
Span.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is an informal interview involving RCP Jandy Span. It is a result of a failed continuing education audit. RCP Span failed the CE audit and only provided 5 approved hours out of the required 20. In addition, she has not completed 2 hours of ethics. RCP Span did reply to the complaint, stating that she was unable to locate her certificates because she couldn't access her previous email system. She states, quote, I figured I wouldn't get audited again because this is the second or third time it's happened in 6 years. We did offer a consent agreement, which was not accepted or signed. Your options today, since she's not here, are what?
Dismissal, letter of concern, move to a formal hearing.
Can we order the consent to be signed?
No, she's not here.
She's not here. If she were here, you could order the civil penalty with the CE together. But
no discipline if she's not here.
And I did look up, I did review her licensing history because of what she stated. This is the second or third time that she's been required to do it. She was audited previously and did pass the audit. She filed, that was the first time she spent it 4 years ago. She filed a late renewal application where she was required to send in her continuing education the second time. So this is the second audit.
But it feels like the third to her. What year was that first audit, the actual audit?
I believe it was 2013. I'd have to pull the file. It was one of the first ones that I did when I was here.
Okay. My biggest issue with this one is I figured I wouldn't get audited again.
And I
have a problem with that statement.
Yeah, I think she is dual licensed. I think she is a
LPN.
Yeah.
So whatever she's doing for nursing board will probably be acceptable here. We just haven't received them.
Does the nurse, I don't believe the nursing board requires it.
That's true. They don't require it, but I know they still get a lot. So,
so we're pretty limited in what we can do because she's not here.
We can move it to a formal hearing.
We can move it to a formal.
Yep. Do we have a motion?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to go to a formal hearing. Any discussion? All in favor of moving to a formal hearing, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes. And the board will now call the case of Jared Leeson, case 2018-RCE-0015.
And I just want to, I don't know if you gave an update to the board, but the other agenda item regarding RCP Hill.
Yeah, I was just
We pulled that from the agenda because he signed the consent agreement that was offered yesterday afternoon. So that case has been resolved.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is an informal interview wherein the allegation is that RCP Leeson failed the continuing education audit. He only provided 15 and a half hours, but required 20. In addition, he did not have 2 hours of the ethics CE. He has provided a response, written reply, stating that he's been unable to access his records due to personal family issues, and then I refer you to the email for specifics. I don't have anything further unless you have any questions.
So my question for this one is, we offered a consent.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't sign it.
Mm-hmm.
He says he can't access his CEUs for whatever his reasons are, but still won't sign the consent, because that would take care of the problem.
I don't know. The only comment I have, the answer to your comment, is that when these things get, unfortunately, staff has to do a lot of extra work to send us to hearing. And the day before the hearing or the informal interview is when we get the call.
Because they don't think we're serious.
What do I have to do to sign it? So staff has always said, if you sign it, you resolve it. There's a different tactic, administrative tactic, to say, you know, no, you were given 10 days to sign it, which is in the original letter, and we push it to the board meeting and make them be here to resolve it, or ends up in hearing, and not offer any consent agreements before the hearing and actually hold the hearing. But I need that direction from the board if we want to start doing that and playing that kind of...
What we were doing for a little bit a couple years ago, which I don't know what stopped, I don't know why, We were upgrading the consent agreement to a disciplinary. Do you remember that? Where we were doing the decrees of censure with the civil penalty and the missing CD if they were coming in between the informal and the formal and asking to resolve the issue. I do have a few that I did back then. That's another option.
When we send a consent out, does it say in there that you have 10 days to sign this?
Absolutely.
Then we should not be accepting a signature after 10 days. So the day before a meeting, sorry, your 10 days are lapsed. Your interview, your informal interview is tomorrow.
No, and like as I said, I think there were maybe a handful of cases a couple years ago where we did come to hearing, but on the day of, they would sign the disciplinary consent. So I think the board had accepted those in the past. But it has become problematic that people don't take this seriously. You know?
Right, and I think especially after we're at this point, so as far as I'm concerned, the consent at this moment is now off the table. It's not just available to sign whenever you want.
So, it's not agendized. We may have to write up a policy for this and bring it back to the board next month for a vote. So. And then have specifics on, well, if you don't sign it before the informal interview, you got to go to the informal interview. And if you don't sign that non-disciplinary before the hearing, it's off the table forever. You have to go to the hearing.
And just as an FYI, once you send this to formal hearing, it's within my jurisdiction, not yours anymore. So I do retain the ability under Title 41 to offer a consent agreement that I think is fair and within the state's best interest.
Okay.
You are still, those are still presented to you, and you don't have to accept them. So if it ever comes down to something like that, just an FYI.
Okay.
That's probably what happened.
All right, so I think, and when I bring it up under R7 for items on future agendas, I think we need to have a discussion about consent agendas and the time frame.
Time
what happens on day 11.
That's
yeah.
That's fine.
Okay, so that's a different topic.
Okay.
So let's go back to Mr. Leeson here. Once again, our options are limited because he's not here. We can take no disciplinary action. So we're really dismissing or going to a formal hearing.
So I'll move that we go to a formal hearing.
We have a motion and a second to go to a formal hearing. Any discussion? All in favor of moving to a formal hearing, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes. And that brings us to the case of Rayanne Kieran, case 2018-RCE-0012.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is another instance where this RCP Kieran has failed a continuing education audit. We hardly have had any response from her until recently. Wherein we got some information that if you look at page 469, she is asking to withdraw or resign her respiratory license. And there's another explanation in the letter on 470 about her working in the industry and doesn't wish to renew her license or hold her license any longer. We still haven't received any of the continuing education, so the allegation remains that she's failed to provide proof of continuing education. Again, you have
and not
same.
Here. No discipline to be taken today.
Correct.
Well, we dismiss or go to a formal.
But if they choose to give up their license, it's under as a disciplinary.
You don't have a statute that allows you to accept voluntary surrender, so the way we do it is through consent agreement only. So she would have to consent to a disciplinary surrender. I have not sent her an agreement. I am happy to send her an agreement to that effect, along with the complaint notice of hearing.
But we can't do a consent because she's not here.
Right. Oh, no, I can send the consent with the complaint notice of hearing.
Right, we still have to go to a hearing. We still have to say we want to go to a hearing, though. We can't just offer her a consent.
No.
Because she's not here.
The motion to vote could be that we send this to formal administrative hearing and direct staff, Attorney General's office, to offer a disciplinary consent agreement for surrender of license.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second.
And a second. Any discussion on that one?
So if she doesn't sign the consent agreement,
we'll go to hearing.
We'll go to hearing. Yeah, absolutely. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay. And that motion passes.
the policy too on the ability for one to surrender their license without it being anything other than just a surrender.
That's not a policy. That's not a policy. There's actually a law that states that you cannot surrender a license if there's an open complaint. Your license goes into a suspended status.
No, I'm not
saying
if there's a complaint or issue.
If somebody would like to retire their license, we absolutely would accept a non-disciplinary surrender at any point. But they
say you're just getting old and you want to retire.
At any point, they can submit a resignation, but they can't do so under
while there's an open complaint.
Which is typically when they come to us and say
are you talking about with a complaint or just generally I want a retired status, and I want to be able to volunteer down at the hospital on the weekends.
I don't wish to have a license later on.
Yes.
Good.
Okay. Sticking with the agenda.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. We're going to go to R5, discussion and action on executive director's report. Take it away, Jeff.
Just real quick updates. GAO hasn't... There's a hole right now on the end of the last fiscal year, which is affecting the reports that are happening for July. So I don't have a written budget report for July prepared for you. Things are remaining the same. Appropriation is at the same level. We're not in dire need of cash for our appropriation. So we're on schedule for that. I'm going to segue into budget requests for 2020. Because I don't have the final numbers from last year yet, I haven't submitted our budget request to OSPB for fiscal year 2020 yet. That is going to be due at the beginning of September. I'm not planning on asking for any additional monies over what our appropriation currently is. The only item that's going to be in that request is support for e-licensing, which is here, where they're trying to centralize that at DOA at the asset office. When I say support for your e-licensing, I'm talking about an administrator that can fix things in our new e-licensing system, which will be here. My projection is now within the next year.
And I
say that because of this reason. We were supposed to go live in April, end of April. It's now August. I made the administrative decision not to go live. There's 12 other boards that went live with the new system. We have the luxury of having an electronic system that we're currently using. They are still experiencing huge problems with customers logging in. It just goes on and on. It's not ready for us to go live yet. When it is ready, I'll let you know, but we're not there yet. So I don't know if that's going to happen. If we go live with the new system before the end of the year, I'll be happy. Okay.
And this is going to enable them to submit their CEUs and do all of that stuff online without actually having to talk to staff.
Correct. The requirement, the change of policy was that when the system goes live, you must submit scans of your continuing education with your application. And so then becomes a requirement of your renewal application to have submitted all 20 hours. You have to have those 20 hours, and staff will have checked that before we issue your license renewal. So it becomes part of the application process. The time frames for processing renewal applications kick in. If they don't have their 20 hours, they'll receive a deficiency letter. So a lot of that should be automated. It's just not in the new system. But when we go live, that's going to be the requirement. So as far as random audits, next year, we're not going to have any. Your license is not going to get renewed unless you have your 20 hours in the right areas.
Right. So gone are the days of renewing your license the day before it expires.
That's a choice. I mean,
that's good.
I'm sure we'll have a pretty quick turnaround time. I mean, I still, you know, everybody that has their certificates there are still probably going to get renewed within 24, 48 hours. But if you wait till 11 p.m. the night before your license expires, there could be a little gap there. Yeah.
Make sure you don't go to work.
So does anybody have any questions on e-licensing?
Nope.
I can get into specifics. So it's very problematic right now.
Can I just ask, we raised the license fees to help cover some of those expenses, correct?
Yes. And we're on track, so...
just want to make sure we don't have to raise them again.
We're not... I've raised fees before. I'm actually really pleased with the way the cash balance is. We're not getting too much money into our cash balance that legislature or somebody can look at and sweep it out. We have about, I think, half a year to three quarters of a year of appropriation extra. So we don't have a full year's appropriation or cash balances. That's good. So then it doesn't look attractive for anybody to take those fees. So overall, we paid about $46,000 for the start of e-licensing. I paid another $8,500 at the end of the project so 13 boards are doing this together. So we bought more time from Deloitte to configure stuff for Salesforce for another 2-3 weeks at the end of the project. I wish I had that decision back. And then we spent another $10,000 at the beginning of the fiscal year for our current system. So the ongoing is going to affect our board about $20,000 a year for support administration of the licensing for the number of users that we have and so forth, about $20,000 a year right now. So I'm not expecting
that. I just want to make sure we're covered there.
Yeah. I don't have anything else on that. So budget request for 2020 is going to get submitted to the governor's office. At the same appropriation, there will be some money set aside for e-licensing. And then draft rules, next item on this. I need feedback on the draft rules. I handed them out 2 months ago. I haven't heard anything, which means they're perfect, right? So I'm going to send them out by email. And Alan, if you get some time, just pick them apart. And I just need some feedback on language. Because I sent stuff to board member Crawford, and I get a very straightforward response back.
Excellent. Now it's on it.
If you can give me some feedback on the rules, we're getting ready to submit them for a promulgation. We'll do the same communication plan. We'll roll it out. But I need your buy-in and your approval before I start telling everybody we're changing.
Your name's
on my notes now, Alan. I don't have anything else unless anybody has any questions on budget, anything like that.
Has this move affected the budget at all, this move into this building?
I just got that bill. So we were paying about $19,000 a year at the old building in rent. The bill's $11,000 a year, so we saved... Okay, so there's two effects to that. We're paying less, but we also lost that appropriation.
Right.
So it's not like it's that extra $8,000 is something we can spend and it's in our appropriation, but we're paying less in rent here than we were there.
So not going to worry any less.
Right.
So
it's more the same situation.
But you have less space too, right?
We have less space. We went from 50% less. So we had about 1,400 and some odd square feet over there. We have 750 chargeable square feet here.
Nicer boardroom.
It's fantastic boardroom. But I have a feeling we might be spending some money on some cabling or a switch, because the whole idea behind this meeting was to hardwire computers so that we get a quicker internet speed instead of using the Wi-Fi, and I discovered today that all of the ports and the tables are not hooked into the switch. And the tech also informed me that the switch does not have enough availability to plug in 10-15 laptops. So we got to work on that a little bit too.
Okay. Thank you.
I mean, you can go back to how you used to do it with the big gigantic books.
Would you like me to do that?
No, my tablet's working great.
So, I put something new on this agenda, Frankie. I don't know if you saw this R56.
The summary?
Yes. Yeah. So, I plagiarized this from my board. I've gotten in trouble because I tend to stray away from the executive director report or things that are agendized, and hopefully this will give us the ability to talk about things that are not necessarily printed on the agenda, current events, any summaries from board members or staff that can then end up being a future agenda item. So I don't know if there's anything. I will tell you that we went to the Arizona Society meeting Tuesday and Wednesday. I was there. We gave out some information and just made our presence seen. Kathy and Charlotte went out and talked to folks about licensing and got to see a little more about what's going on with the vendors and so forth. So we did that for the last couple of days.
And so did either of you ladies get any feedback from the RCPs of Arizona on anything?
No, there were still the new requirements seems to be the big question, what's classified as alive and what, and where can you find ethics, type of thing. And it was relative because Frankie was speaking about ethics, so in fact, it was a very good conference to have attended to get a lot of yours to me, a lot of your CEUs, but also your ethics part of it. So she covered our part of the procedure, we thought, in depth. I mean, it should be everything that you wanted to know, about what happens with...
Good.
Yeah, with your license.
I know this meeting is CEUs. How many ethics CEUs are given for this meeting?
Four total CEUs, two of which are ethics.
So they can get all their ethics mm-hmm. right here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's free.
And it's free.
And it's free.
I don't have anything else.
This boardroom should be packed each month.
This is actually the least amount of people I've seen lately.
And there was a lot of conversation after Frankie's lecture that they weren't aware that they could come down here and get two CEUs of one ethics. So I suspect us to get a lot more.
Good.
Because we are very ethical in our motion.
Right. And I failed to mention that Assistant Attorney General Frankie Schoon-Eckberg Burke gave an excellent presentation to the audience at the society. She had a really nice PowerPoint presentation, and thank you very much for taking the time to do that.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It was very fun. I had a good time.
I don't have anything else unless board has questions.
Did R52 happen and I just missed it?
Probably. It's R52.
In application, investigation, and probation report?
No, I skipped over. Would you like it to happen?
I would. Yes, please.
Okay. Go
He's
going
to pass it to me.
That's why I figured it didn't happen, because I hadn't heard you yet. I would like it to happen.
Glad to hear that you missed me, Tracy.
Yeah.
Okay. On our application report, apps have been going up a little bit. They've been kind of all over the board. Usually they're like 140, and we're just at about 113 right now. So that's how many are pending and outstanding. This month we're licensing 28. Fee waiver applications, we had 7. So, and out of those, 4 were actually granted, 3 of them were not. Haven't had anything on the volunteer applications at all. Late renewals that are still pending, there's 7 of those. Only 2 were approved this month. As far as closure for those who did not complete their application, there was 4. And regarding our other report, our licensing time frame report, even though we issued 28, we are still at one for getting that done as far as administrative completeness. We are 1 day for substantive review time frame, so overall time frame for that is 2. And since we had 2 late renewals that were issued, We also, administrative completeness took us 1 day. Substantive review time frame, 1 day, with a total of 2 days overall.
Excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do that cover. I have an Auditor General audit update here. So we had our sunset audit 2 years ago. They are in the office now to do a follow-up on their recommendations. They're still asking for some information. I expect to have... I'm hoping that this year we get the letter from them. Thank you, you've done everything that you've updated all your recommendations, and we don't have to follow up with anything else. I'm pretty sure that's what's going to happen. The only thing that would be outstanding is I tried to get, one of the recommendations was that 100% of our civil penalties go to the general fund. Right now, our statute, which is an anomaly in boards and commissions, is that of our civil penalties, 90% go to our board fund, 10% go to the general fund. They want 100% to go to the general fund. I haven't gotten anybody, I didn't get anybody to pick that up last year in the legislature. So we talked with Senator Bartow, but just didn't get it dropped. This year, I'm going to have to try to get that dropped, so we probably will have some legislation on at least that issue.
So 100% of the funds will go to the general fund, which means it will have less in our budget, right?
In our cash balance, yeah. So, for example, then, Joe, is that last fiscal year, we had about a little $10,000 in change in civil penalties. So $9,000 that went to us, to our cash balance. $1,000 went to the general fund. And traditionally, all the state boards have 100% of your civil penalties going to the general fund. And it's the speed trap in a small town analogy. We're not supposed to be issuing civil penalties to
increase our cash flow. It makes sense.
Yeah. So that's really the only thing that would be outstanding from the Auditor General audit, but I need a sponsor and somebody to be able to drop the bill to fix that.
Okay.
So they've been advised today.
Okay.
Because it seems like it's been a long time since they were here.
It doesn't seem like that long. We've made a lot of changes in continuing education since they've been here, so time frames and all that.
Well, right, the licensing time frames.
So I'm hoping they've been working on this for 3 or 4 months, so I'm hoping it gets wrapped up here pretty quick.
Okay, thank you. We will move to R6, which is the call to the public, and the call to the public is when we give anyone in the audience the opportunity to speak, should they choose to speak. You would have 5 minutes to say whatever you'd like to say, but we can't have any conversation about whatever it is you're talking about because it's not on the agenda. However, it's an opportunity for you to speak, should you want to. It's also typically the time where we say, did you learn anything today? So anyone have any comments or feedback about what they got out of today? Worthwhile, not worthwhile?
Oh, come on.
Someone's got to say something.
You've been quiet all morning.
It's the ethics part.
Are you just here to collect your CEUs in the back there?
Lily gave a nice presentation of the conference.
Yes. Oh, good. Thank you.
Just a question for you guys out there. Would you use the e-licensing, having had the opportunity?
That sounds like it'd be a lot easier.
Yeah.
So you'd be on board with that, just to click and get her done?
Go ahead. Not that they have a choice. They're going to have to use it.
Did you learn anything today? I mean, if you have one takeaway from today, I hope it's that you need to get your stuff in on time.
Right. What is your takeaway from today?
Be compliant.
Yeah.
Use good judgment.
Good judgment. I like that. Yeah.
Don't drink and drive.
All right. So we have a couple of good takeaways.
Is this I'm curious, how many people, is this the first time meeting they've been to? Majority? Okay, great. Thanks for coming down.
Tell your friends, we're here every month. Get your ethics. All right, R7, items to be placed on future agenda. And I would like to have a conversation about what happens on day 11 of a consent agenda. So I think that needs to go on a future agenda. Anything else, anybody?
I was going to say, Brian, I had a question about
Oh, the retirement of...
Surrendering a license.
That's a legislative thing, so if we want to start talking about that, there's several other... I think the MDs have it.
The only way to accept it right now is through a consent agreement because you don't have a specific statute.
Okay, but through a consent agreement, it does not have to be...
It doesn't have to be...
Because you did anything wrong.
No.
It
and
can just be... You want to
we've
retire,
taken at
right?
least two in, as a non-disciplinary. Somebody who was getting, she was sick and she was getting ready to retire. And then she had reported that she's not physically able to perform her duties anymore. So we gave her a surrender. There was no complaint.
I think most of the time that we see, and I don't know if we can even talk about it now because it's not on the agenda, but most of the time that we see people wanting to surrender their license is because they've got a complaint and they don't want to deal with that. And that's why we've always said no. We can't just surrender in lieu of closing the case.
But in practice, Jack and I do make the call to accept non-disciplinary. We have accepted in the
And
past.
We always agree.
I bet you do.
We always agree
always
on the same
do.
Thing. Don't we?
Always.
Okay, but, you know, I just brought it up because, you know.
The retirement thing, you know, Joe, you're talking about retirement with an open allegation. The retirement thing has come up. Not only has come up this board meeting for a while, that we should have a retired status, reduced renewal fee. So I think if we're going to address it, maybe we can do it all at one time, get a policy in place, maybe in the interim for time frames, and then legislatively try to get a statute.
Otherwise, people are left hanging with then an expired license. If you I don't want an expired license.
In the past,
either.
You know, generally, I think we've told people, just wait it out. If you're not working and you're staying out of trouble, but then the whole thing of can they stay out of trouble and somebody gets a DUI?
Okay.
And
we can put that on the agenda as well.
Did I go way off topic?
Yes.
I apologize.
Okay, that's on the next agenda.
Yes, on the next agenda.
Okay.
Anyone else have future agenda items? No? Then we are adjourned at 11:10.
Tracy.
Oh,
I didn't get to call names.
Okay, that's fine. I enjoyed it. That's fine. She's going to call names for CEUs now.
Yeah.
Make sure you're here. Go for it.
Okay, if you can raise your hand or say here. Brad?
Okay.
William?
What she's talking about.
Paul?
Amy? We actually have a definition.
Jacqueline?
Yes.
Melissa?
Did you use the Wi-Fi or the Wi-Fi or the download?
I used both. I used both.
Uria?
Yeah.
James?
You'll see some follow-up emails.
Okay.
Richard?
Oh, you've already sent them out.
No, I will.
Chris?
I will do my
okay.
Leah? Yeah, you
okay.
Will.
Sounds good.
Sherry?
Let me know what I can do.
Donald?
90
days. William?
There you
go. Eloise. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Cool.
I will, it will be all the orders.
I'm moving.
The state hospital over the west side.
So I actually have a lot of my house. I'm moving out of my house. I got
It's a wonderful idea. So we've been doing that, but.